Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to this week's episode of Mum and Mama, brought to you as always by the lovely Golding Accountancy. We are golding.com for all your accountancy needs.
This week I was joined by the very lovely Nikki Rettigan, who is the Epic Life Coach. Nikki contacted me on Instagram. A friend of hers had listened to her podcast and recommended to Nikki that she get in touch to come on it, because Nikki's, as you will hear, has got a story of what she's been through in her life and what's led her to becoming a life coach. And this is a two-part podcast because we were chatting for like 2 hours. I felt a connection with Nikki. It's really nice when you meet people and feel like a strong connection to them because you've either been through similar experiences or have a similar outlook on life. So I really, really enjoyed our chat, and yeah, I hope you do too. If this is the first time you're listening, then I had some wonderful guests on. Last week I chatted to the lovely Rich Wilson about men's mental health. He is the host of Insane in the Membrane. I've had my mate Jade on talking about racism in the mental health services and maternal health services. I've had the lovely model and actress Nina Kate on. There's loads of good stuff, something for everyone, so check out other episodes. And I had a very exciting week this week because I got to chat to the very lovely Gail Poulter all about her journey through mental health and, well, life. To be honest, I watched her BAFTA winning documentary a few days before I did the podcast with her, because I hadn't watched it yet and I thought I had to watch it before I spoke to her. And I was kind of anticipating that it would be quite a heavy conversation, but it was actually just a really nice chat. I mean, obviously we spoke about some serious stuff, but yeah, it was lovely. She's so lovely. I was lucky enough to meet her a couple of years ago at one of the Hardcore Listing shows, and she's just the nicest person, like generally just really friendly and nice. So yeah, that was really lovely. So I hope you enjoy this, and I'll see you in a bit.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Work. Work.
That's exciting. Today, you are the first person that has contacted me and was like, I want to come on your podcast, which is amazing because that's what I want people to do. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. It was recommended to me. One of my friends put me in touch with you, and she said, because I'd mentioned about going on another podcast on Facebook in my group, and she contacted me and she said, I listened to this amazing podcast. She's really fun. She's really nice. And she said, like, maybe you could contact her to go on it, because she was asking for people. And I was like, okay. I'm always up for chatting.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. Who was it?
It was Sadie. I don't know if you'll know her, but she sort of knows Antonia Price, your millionaire mum.
Yes.
I think that's maybe how she, you know, got to listen to your podcast. Yeah. And now she's like a regular listener. She really enjoys it.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, it's nice if you know someone likes it.
Well, I've been listening since, and I think it's really good.
Oh, love that. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
It's funny, one of my mates at the gym that I go to, she's a counsellor, and she said that she was going to recommend it because she's got a few clients that are single parents, and she's like, I'm going to recommend it to them. I was like, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it?
Reaching out, you know, one by one. Yeah. But yeah, so anyway, today I'm joined by the lovely Nikki Rettigan.
Yes!
Who is the Epic Life Coach.
Yeah, I am. I mean, nobody can see my logo, but it's behind me.
That's really nice. So you sent me a wicked message. It made me laugh. Even though it wasn't, obviously it's not a funny situation, the message just didn't really make me laugh. But basically you said you've got a very good story and you wanted to share it. So tell us about you and how you got to where you are. So where are you from? Are you from Essex?
Yeah, I live in Grays.
Oh, I went to Grays Convent.
Did you really? Oh my gosh.
Did,
so
yes.
Whereabouts did you live? Like, were you in Blackshots, this sort of area? Oh, right, okay.
No, I lived in Basildon, but my parents wanted me to go. I think it was quite a good school, mm-hmm. and my options in Basildon weren't as good. Like, mm-hmm. I had to do the 11 plus to get in, but it's not a grammar school. But I think it's probably because I was out of the area, I had to do some kind of exam. So, yeah, I used to get the bus every day from Basildon.
Oh, yeah, I was Willie Edds.
Oh, yeah.
Just down the
How
road.
How old are you?
36. I'm 37 next week.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you.
My best friend Nicole went to Willie Edds, but we're 43, so...
I've got a friend who probably knows her. Oh. Yeah. Oh, it's a small world, isn't it?
It is such a small world. So you know Antonia? Do you know Antonia?
Yeah, well...
You do?
On a very sort of like... distant friend. We went out on a night out to the Sugar Hut... When I was in my early 20s, because my friend Gemma worked for Antonia. And so we went to her house and had pre-drinks and we went to the Sugar Hut. And I remember sort of thinking, wow, she is amazing. She's just so herself and she didn't care. She, you know, like didn't care what anybody thought. And at the time, I just really aspired to be like that. And listening to the podcast, I felt proud, which is weird to, you know, say, but I really did. I really felt like... Yes, girl, you really made that happen. Like, well done. I really recommend anybody listen to that episode. I thought it was really, really
100%.
Good.
I was shocked because I don't know her. She's a friend of a friend, but I had no idea that she had a kid at 17.
No.
And then two more, and then another one, and then started a
business.
£1 million business. Like, it's so inspirational.
Yeah, definitely.
It really is to, you know, if you do well, if you're lucky enough to have the opportunity to be able to work hard. And, you know, make things happen. And it's nice that she's a woman and she was essentially a single mum as well.
Brilliant. No, I know. Go on, Antonia.
Yeah. Okay, so you're from Grays. So tell us.
Tell us.
Tell us everything.
Right, well, I mean, what do you want to know? Like, how was it like the mum stuff that you want to know? Like, what happened or how I became a coach?
Yeah, just all about you. So what led you to being a coach? What did you want to be, like when you were at school, did you always kind of have a inkling that you wanted to kind of help? But no.
No. So it's the weird thing for me is that I have transformed so hugely that I really am so different to how I used to be. But I think that inside, obviously, I've always been this person that I am now, but it was so covered up with everything else, all the fear and worry and anxiety and all the things that I've been through. And I just did became like not myself. So I lost myself completely. And that was from quite a young age. I didn't really know who I was or, you know, and so I wouldn't have even thought. I know I wanted to be a vet. And because that's when I where I did my work experience. I worked in a vet, and then I couldn't hack it because I kept crying because obviously it's hard to see the animals in pain and that. And but I would have never had the confidence to be a coach. I would have thought no one's going to listen to me, you know, no one's going to want me to tell them how they should live because, or how they, you know, ways to help them because I'm in such a state myself, you know.
So where did that come? Were you just very shy and full of doubt when you were younger?
Yeah, I think there was just a lot of insecurity because I did feel shy, but I masked it with being over the top. You know, it would be like I would go really, you get these coping mechanisms. I'd get really crushing anxiety before I started being able to drink. So I started drinking quite early, which helped with that. But like if I was ever in a group, I would be like, ground, swallow me up, ground, swallow me up, ground, swallow me up, because I was so mortified. So then it would be, ha ha, big clown, laughing joke to cover it up.
Yeah.
And it's neither one's like healthy, but obviously as a teenager, I didn't really know what was going on. I was just doing what I was doing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's taken me a really, really long time to sort of iron out all of these kinks in my...
Where do you think the insecurity came from? Were you self-conscious or...?
I think as a child, like as a young child, I was very confident and I was always like, this is what my mum and dad say. So obviously this is like pre 7 years old or whatever. And I was really a bit like I am now, I'm proud to say, you know, like outgoing, friendly, you know, don't worry about anything. And I like doing what I like doing, you know, and it's all very fun. And that's kind of what I was like when I was really young. And then I got diagnosed with scoliosis when I was about 5.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that, I think, has had, like, a huge impact on me. And I didn't really recognise it until much, much, much later, how much it had shaped me, physically and emotionally shaped me as a person. So I think I just got weaker and weaker emotionally, mentally, you know, I lived in fear because I was like, inevitably I'm going to have this massive operation and I don't know when it's going to be. I don't know exactly what it entails. So I was too young to sort of acknowledge that, to understand it. But as soon as I was diagnosed, it was like this stream of weird physical events. I got hit by a car, I had my appendix out, my knee up, I fell down the stairs and broke my arm, I broke my wrist, like all these things kept happening.
Wow.
And I think now being a coach and understanding how people's mental patterns work and your beliefs, I can see a real pattern with me. You know, I was a really healthy little girl, there was nothing wrong with me, and then all of a sudden it was very much like a switch as you know, since then I've had some serious physical issues and the coaching came about because I wanted to put a stop to it. Whatever I was doing, I was like, I can't keep thinking this way and creating these really serious physical problems, you know? So I think that's probably where the insecurity stemmed from.
So with the scoliosis, what operation did you have to have and how old were you when that all happened?
So my first one, it was a spinal fusion, and that didn't correct the scoliosis, but that was the first spinal surgery I had, and I was 11 when I had that done. And basically it's like the vertebrae had slipped out rather than having a slipped disc, so they used bone to fuse it to the vertebrae above and below so it doesn't slip out anymore and break your spinal cord. So I had that done, And then when I was 12, it was a 5-hour surgery to have a metal rod put in and my spine bound to it so that it would straighten me up somewhat.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was like, it was really traumatic, but at the time it was kind of like my family were really good, very like, you're all right, and gave me like that positive, you know, you're gonna be fine. Oh, she's fine, and yeah, I'm grateful for that. But at the same time, I think we didn't really have the tools, my parents didn't have the tools to understand the depths of the impact that something like that will have on a teenager. And yes, I just was like, you know, I'm just gonna smile and get on with it. And I had this plaster cast over my whole body for 6 weeks, and
wow,
you know, it was pretty intense. And you know, I think I just became very sort of like, I wanted to hide. I felt ashamed of my body, because I remember looking at it after I'd had the surgery and going, I'm not straight, like I'm still really crooked, I'm still twisted, and I don't look right, and is this the best I'm ever going to look? And I was really disappointed. Yeah. And so it was like, right, cover up, hide, and felt like I didn't really want to be seen anymore.
That's such a hard age as well, isn't it? Because everything's developing. You do become really self-conscious, don't you?
Yeah. So well, I'd started to get boobs just before, and then they put the cast on me, and I'd gone down to 5.5 stone, but I was the same height as I am now. I haven't grown since. I went in at 5 foot. I came out at 5'2". They gave me 2 inches, straightening me up, and I've been 5'2" ever since. I didn't grow anymore. And my boobs were like so squashed into this little cast. And then obviously as I'm putting a bit of weight on over the 6 weeks, because I lost a lot in hospital, I'm like trapped in this cast. And they had to open it so that I could breathe properly. I was getting these shooting pains. One of my ribs had kind of come out through the skin of my back, so that was like another thing that I had to treat. Sorry, I can see you're like, ooh, it's not.
No, but it's just, I feel, it's just so horrible, isn't
it? Yeah, it was not the best, and it smelt as well, like, because it was like rotten flesh. I was like, can you imagine? Like, so my boobs have been squashed in, I've got a smelly hunchback.
Days.
Hello, I've got ginger hair, I'm 5.5 stone, and it's not going well for me.
Oh, God.
So, like, obviously, it was not my best time.
Yeah.
And it just ended up lasting for a really long time, because I didn't really know how to get myself out of that, because nothing changed. Yeah. Like, I was like, well, I felt... All through my 20s, I still felt like that little 12-year-old girl, you know.
Yeah,
I never wanted to be called a woman. I really hated that.
Really?
I really hated that. I hated it. I remember a girl referred to me as the lady when I was about 20. She went, going up to her daughter, go and ask the lady. And I physically was like, oh, I don't like that at all. It was like I was trapped. I don't know. I think it was, I just didn't connect to my body. I didn't connect to my body at all. I didn't want to be to consider myself as a woman. I wanted to still be pre-operation, pre-trauma, when I was free, when I was young and happy, and I didn't have all of this to carry.
Yeah.
You know, and it's mad, isn't it? Like,
But it's amazing how you recognise this.
Oh my gosh, it's taken me such a long time to work it all out. Such a long time to work it all out. I'm still working it out now. I'm still finding out things all the time that I'm like, what? I didn't know I thought that. But I love it. I like unpeeling the layers, because it is very freeing. It is. We put ourselves into these cages of all of the things that we've sort of accumulated, all of the, you know, the bars that get put in over time, and it's like slowly taking them away so that you can actually breathe and you can come out and be like, this is who I was meant to be. Not all of that. I'm not a creature. I'm not a freak. You know, I'm acceptable. Yeah. But
that's what I love about counselling, is just finding out why you think the way you think. And I just find it absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I do.
Really do.
I do. I'm such a... I'm like a student of people. Every person, you're probably the same, which is why you love doing the podcast. I'd be the same. Like, I love knowing about everybody. Everyone is fascinating to me. Everyone's got an amazing story. Like, should never put anybody in like a, oh, they're boring, they've got nothing to offer. If they've been alive for like 18 years, they've got a story, and I'm here for it.
100%. Yeah. Oh, so you had the surgery, then you've gone through all that. So being a teenager must have been very hard.
Yeah, it was hard. I actually I don't think I've ever really spoken about this, but it's not like I was hiding it. Probably for like a few years I was hiding it because I didn't want to, like, my mum to think badly of me. But I did used to drink quite a lot when I was a teenager, looking back.
Yeah.
I would often go and get very, very drunk over the field with my friends. And it was par for the course. You know, you're from Basildon, I'm from Grays. It's all good. We go over the park with our mates and we drink White Lightning and we get out of our faces. It's like 2 litres of White Lightning, spin around. And, you know, but when I think back on my teenage years, I kind of, it's like very hazy, because I think there was a lot more of that going on than, it wasn't just for fun.
Yeah,
I think it was like it was numbing me a little bit, and it was helping me to cope.
Did you do it on your own?
I didn't, but I just used to go out a lot. It was like every opportunity that it was socially acceptable, because then I could manage that guilt.
Yes, yeah.
Because guilt's never sat well with me, ever. I really detest feeling guilty. And I would do everything to avoid it. I think it's a really poisonous emotion to feel. And so that, for me, it was like, if I'm going to a party or going out with a friend or if I'm with anybody, so I'd surround myself with this group that would always suggest, should we get some drink? And I'd be like, oh, yeah, go on then. Yeah, yeah, why not? And so it was like, well, it's not me. And they're all doing it. But I think I was using it as like a coping mechanism a little bit. It's not like I just think, looking back now, I can see that that was probably what I was doing. I was like escaping a little bit from how I was feeling.
Yeah, yeah. So did that then turn into carrying that on into your adult years?
So my mum and dad kind of put a stop to that for me, and I was crying out for it, if I'm honest, because a couple of times we'd got ourselves, our group, I was always like going, oh no, don't do that, don't do that. But there were some, you know, cheeky people in my group, and we would get ourselves into a bit of trouble. My mum and dad were like, this isn't acceptable. You're to come in before dark and stay in with me. And I remember thinking, thank God. Thank you, because I didn't like, it's weird, you know, like I didn't like going out and doing what they were doing. I never fit in fully with them. I didn't smoke. Yeah. I wasn't interested in drugs. You know, I didn't want to hurt anyone. I didn't want anything to be damaged, nothing like that.
And yet there
was a real extreme, there was a big group, and there was, you know, people in it that weren't as anywhere near on the same moral compass as me. So it made me very uncomfortable. But still, it was a way to escape. And that felt almost like a compulsion for me. Like, I need to get out of this feeling. And so that's what drove me. But my mum and dad were like, no, you're not to do that anymore. And so I've straightened up a little bit. And it's not like I was ever off the rails. Like, it's, you know, everybody knows I was a good girl. But still, for me, I think that was a path I could have easily slipped down if I hadn't had a mum and dad who were a lot more, you know, if they'd have been less, you know, concerned. So did all my exams and everything else. But into my 20s, I still used to go out and, you know, drink a lot and get myself into a bit of a state where I'd be quite drunk. Like, whenever I'd drink, I would always be quite drunk, so that then I could feel I could be free, because I got known to be this girl, this party girl. Like, not someone that goes out all the time, but when I was out, I was like the Duracell bunny. And I'd be on the podium, having a great time, living my best life. But I couldn't do that without a drink.
Yeah.
Because that's when all the doubt would come in of, you shouldn't be wearing this. You shouldn't even be here. People are looking at you. People are judging you. But drinking, got all of that went away. Yeah. And I felt like I can just be me now. And I loved it because, honestly, my girls' holidays, like on nights out when we would just be wild and have fun and really chat to anybody and be so friendly and free. But that's what drinking used to give me. And I think that that is quite common with a lot of people. It's like, I was really nervous. I had a couple of drinks beforehand. And that's such a standard thing to say. But part of me is like, I wish for you that you didn't feel that way, that you felt that you looked absolutely stunning and that you had nothing to fear, like, and you could just go out and you didn't need that. It's okay if you want to, I'm not judging that, but if you feel you need to, then that's where I feel for people, because I think there's some pain there, and I don't like people to be in pain.
I think that's so ingrained in our culture, though, and it is so common. Like, I stopped drinking a couple of years ago, and it's hard for a lot of people to get their head round. Like, how do you go out and enjoy yourself if you're not drunk?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how can you go to a club if you're not drunk?
Oh, I definitely could now. I definitely could. I feel like I'm in a club sometimes when I'm doing a Facebook Live. I put this really cool filter on earlier, and I was like, woo!
I think it's how you feel in yourself.
It totally is. You know, yeah. Because I do.
You've got that confidence.
When I think back of how that, like, that excitement, I've always had this real core part of me that's just full of excitement like a child. You know, like when you, I was using this example the other day, like when you walk into the fair and you can see it in front of you and you're just, your whole body's like, oh, I can't wait to get on a ride. Like that, I get that often in life. But I used to need drink to let it out because I would hold back. Whereas now, I don't have that fear. I don't hold myself back. So often I'm like before this, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to do the podcast. I'm going to shave my legs and do my hair and do my makeup. And I got really excited about it. Like, it's fun, you know, but it's you know, so a lot of people, they wouldn't feel confident and their ego takes over and starts going, what are you going to say? What are you, you know, you're going to do it wrong? What if your earphones don't work? And it's like, no, don't.
Yep.
I'll just drink that away so it shuts up.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
100%.
But there are other ways. There are other ways of getting rid of it, because I didn't drink mine away, but it's gone now.
I think it's being older as well. As you get older, you do get more confident, don't you?
Yeah.
More self-assured.
Yeah, definitely.
And also, I think having children, you know... Sorry, I'm just going to let my cat out.
he starts clawing the window. It drives me mad. Sorry.
That's okay.
He's like a dog. I think being a mum... When I became a mum, I stopped worrying. I didn't have time to worry about what other people thought of me.
Yeah.
And then I stopped caring.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I really like being older because I don't care, because I was always really self-conscious and insecure, and you know, and I was always thinking, oh my god, I'm shit, and worrying what everyone else thought. But now I couldn't give a toss what anyone else thought.
Yeah.
And I wish that I was like that in my 20s.
Yeah, no, same. You know? This is why I kind of like, I liked coaching. I've got a girl who's 23. She just turned 23. And I love coaching her because I say to her, like, if I'd have had the advice that I'm giving you when I was 23, I would have been such a different person.
Yeah.
I really do, like, promote it for young people before they get into a marriage, before they have kids. You know, get the kinks out of the hose beforehand, because the last thing you want to do is go into parenthood with all that mess, because trust me, it's not great.
It's
very hard.
Yeah, so what's your parenthood story then? So what did you work as?
I was working for a bank, doing, at the time, I was doing like resourcing work for the digital sector. So I would help like the hiring and the contract extensions and stuff like that. That was when I was pregnant when I was doing that job.
Right, okay.
And I was a contractor.
So, have you been in a long-term relationship?
Not long-term. Not so much. So I got pregnant about between 2 and 3 months into our relationship.
Right, yeah.
So we weren't trying.
How old were you?
I was 30 when I got pregnant.
Okay.
Yeah, 30. So it was not... not planned, obviously.
Yep.
And it was just one of those things. We weren't expecting that to be the case. But
yeah,
when I told him, we were both over the moon. Like, both of us were over the moon. So, so happy. And I was really excited to tell him because I knew he would be over the moon as well. Like, I knew he'd be thrilled.
Yeah.
Because it was very much like we met and then straight away we were, like, just together fully. There was no, oh, we're just going to see other... You know, like, we were just like, vroom, like that.
Yeah.
Looking back and knowing what I know now as a coach and as, like, a... studier of myself, I realise that when you've got a really, really strong intention, like something that you desperately want, like a goal, and it's what you keep focusing on and focusing on and focusing on, you can manifest it, you make it happen. And I believe that I desperately wanted a baby and he desperately wanted a baby. And so we came together and we gave each other exactly what we wanted because we saw it in each other. And I believe on our first date, he was like, how many kids do you want? I want to have four. How soon do you want to wait? And I was like, I mean, it's daft. I'm like, oh, he's my dream man. Like, no, this, you know, you need to put a little bit more thought into this, but we are where we are and I wouldn't change it for the world because we both got the best outcome ever. We both adore our daughter. Absolutely love her to bits. But unfortunately, there was a bit of a journey between the two of us because we did not get to know each other before we, you know, and you cannot, it is not advisable. Do not have a baby with a stranger. It's not ever going to be.
It's hard enough having a baby with someone you've known for 10 years because you don't know what you're going to be like as a parent until you have a baby. You've got all the best intentions in the world. Actually, when you're faced with no sleep, depending on what kind of baby you have, whether it's, you know, if it's up all night crying, like, you don't know how you're going to be. And also, your hormones affect you a lot, don't they? So, I hated my ex for the last night, for the first 9 months of having a baby. And we've been together, I want to say, 6 years before we had the kid. Before we had Lola. So it's when you know someone it's hard enough, let alone when you've only been with someone for 5 minutes. Like that is such a lot of pressure.
And I think I kind of felt that, but I put it to the back of my mind because as soon as I found out I was pregnant, we were both like, we didn't talk about it, but it was like we're all in. Yes, we were both all in. But I had this fear that I wasn't acknowledging because I had like a night terror. I think I had a couple and I would wake up screaming in the night and like try and fight him, like push him away from me, like going, I don't know who you are. And he'd be like, it's me. And I was like, and then I'd come round and go, oh, I thought you was a stranger, like attacking me. Like, I mean, come on now. Wow. What is your mind telling you? Like
that? Wow.
I obviously had this deep fear. But I was already fully committed to making it work, you know, and but there was, you know, I know better now than to ignore what your body's trying to tell you, what your emotions are trying to tell you, you know, but we just plough through. And at that point, I really didn't have a choice. And it's not like I was even consciously struggling. It was so pushed down. This is what we're doing. And so we carried on. And it was okay. It was fine. Like we got on really well. We bought a house and we moved in 5 days before she was born. So I was out in the garden trying to like get the garden sorted while I was having contractions. Oh, and then carrying on snipping the bushes. I'm gonna get the washing machine in before she comes. Quickly get that done. And then had her on the 11th of September 2015, and proud moment for me as well because I was told I wouldn't be able to necessarily have a natural birth because of all the problems I'd had with my spine. And I'd always kept myself really fit. And obviously, I've been doing a lot of pole dancing. I say obviously because I'm assuming you had a look on my Instagram and you saw my pictures, but I don't know if you did.
I didn't actually.
No, I wasn't sure. Yeah, because that's another weird one. Like, I'll talk about that in a bit. But I'd been doing a lot of pole dancing because just before I got pregnant, I'd come second in a competition in Blackpool. And so I was really fit, really like strong. And so I really resented being told I wouldn't be allowed to have a natural birth. I was like, I can, I'm sure that I can do it. They went, well, we're not sure because of your fusion and, you know, whatever else. And I was like, well, can I speak to somebody who will be able to say whether or not they think I can do it? So I went and spoke to a fracture and trauma consultant, and he spoke to me for a while, and he said, like, have you had any pain during your pregnancy? I was like, no, I'm still exercising. You know, I'm really looking after myself. I feel like I'm strong enough to do this. Because the only other option was to have general anaesthetic and be put out, because they couldn't inject my spine because of the metal work, and I only had 3 available vertebrae in the middle, so it was too dodgy.
Oh yeah, wow.
Yeah, so I was like, I don't want to be asleep when she's born, you know, like I've been so excited about this, I want to be awake and experience it.
I imagine that would be, even though you know you're having the baby, to just go from, oh, I'm in labour, to waking up and you've got a baby, like,
there's different things for, I mean, my sister, she's pregnant and she's due to have her 3rd cesarean, and she's like, if they can just put me out and then give me the baby after, that will be fine. I do not need to see it born. She hates the cesareans, bless her. So, you know, there's always different opinions on it. But me personally, I don't want that. I felt again, it's like another choice that's being taken away from me.
Yeah,
and another operation that I don't want to have to have. I don't want to have that. So I got I was very determined. And he said, the consultant was like, yeah, I think you can do it. And so he signed off on it. So I actually managed to push her out naturally. Just a little bit of gas and air. It took me an hour and 20 minutes because she had to go around an extra bend. So I was pushing for an hour and 20 minutes because my hips, you know, like normally, they have to kind of go up and under a little bit.
Yeah,
so mine's like up, under and to the side because my hips are so, my pelvis is so twisted.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a bit, so she went, she keeps coming down and getting sort of sucked back up.
Yeah.
Like, come on! But so she was born naturally, and it was amazing. And then it was very soon after that that things started to turn a bit sour between me and her dad.
Right.
And it's a horrible thing to say, and it was a hard thing for me to fathom for a long time, but this is just the truth, what I think. And I believe that because we both had that intention of, I want the baby, I felt like he, as soon as the baby was born, it was like I was no longer necessary.
Yes. Yep.
And so he became very obsessive about our daughter, and he started to treat me in a very different way to what he had done before. And, you know, it was really, really hard because I felt very vulnerable, very hormonal.
Yeah.
And
did you feel like he, did he change? But did you feel a change in, like, he became a different person?
Yeah, so he, like, totally doted on me during pregnancy. Like, would walk along holding my hand, make sure that I wouldn't, like, hurt myself on the cobbled, you know, streets and things like that, you know. Like, and he was very, like, bringing home little baby clothes and really doting. But as soon as I had her, it was like my feelings no longer sort of mattered. And he would sort of do things that I thought were really harsh, but it wasn't necessarily, I don't think he's not a bad guy, he really isn't a bad guy, and I always feel very, like, horrible saying things about him because he is a great dad and he's there for Paige 100%. But being honest, you know, like, 6 weeks after I'd had her, he told me he was going out with some friends, and then it turned out he'd gone into a strip club. Well, don't mind, you know, that if you're going to be honest about it. But because I felt so fragile, I was really sort of, that hurt my feelings quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then sort of, I think it was 10 weeks after I'd had her, he'd gone out on a night out. Well, he went out on a night out when she was a week old, you know, and he came back the next day. And you know, it was, I was like, okay, he's gone. He's just gone, you know. My sister had to come and stay with me to help me with her, because I was still finding my feet with it all. And but yeah, so it was like straight away I went, oh, okay, well, yeah, no, that's okay. And then it was like the strip club, okay, well, you know, I feel like a big fat sweaty mess. You enjoyed yourself, you know. And then you know, so the 10 weeks later, he'd gone out again and come home, and I'd gone down to feed to get the bottle ready for Paige at about 4 in the morning, and I saw his phone go off. And there was like a missed call from a girl's phone number. And so obviously the logical thing for me to do is to go into his phone and start messaging her, pretending to be him.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not condoning this behaviour now. It's not how I would, you know, deal with it, but this is just what I did.
Yeah.
So I'm sat there with my newborn baby in one arm and I'm messaging her with spelling mistakes and everything to make sure she knows it's him.
That's the best dig I've ever heard.
I'm just being honest, he's dyslexic, like, bless his heart. I'd be putting all commas and like, apostrophes in. I had to take all that out, all the grammar. But so I'm messaging and I'm thinking, I'm finding out things I didn't want to find out. Like, he didn't...
You never find anything good.
No, you don't.
When you snoop,
no.
You never find anything good.
No, I should have taken the phone up and spoken to him. You know, I should have took the phone up and said, why is this
but
girl...
But then at least you know.
You know, I don't think that the way that it ended up was, you know, I think that I definitely, I knew in my heart of hearts, if in my gut, I knew that there was something not right. If I was being completely honest, we always know. Yeah. We always know. Yes. We don't need to go through the phone. We don't need to do that. That's just adding fuel to your own fire. It's going to give you pain and you don't deserve that pain.
Yeah, 100%.
So don't do that. I know that now. I know that now, and I learned that the hard way, or the very hard way. So there's me merrily messaging this girl, I think, believe she was 22. And he's, and I actually, call me a mug if you want to, but this again is just what I truly believe. I don't think he physically cheated on me ever.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever did. Yeah. He's told me he didn't, and I know the difference in what he says, and I don't believe that he did. But there was some flirtation going on, and he was leading her up the garden path, and they had had a physical thing before he met me.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, that's something that probably shouldn't have carried on, and they shouldn't have been arranging to meet for a drink or whatever it was that they were doing. But I think that he was just enjoying the attention, because probably I was giving Paige attention and he was like, what about me? And feeling like he wanted an ego boost.
Yeah.
And so that came out of the conversation until I took a selfie of me and Paige and sent it to her, and she blocked me on everything except Instagram, because I found her and I liked a picture of her and her boyfriend. Oh, why are we such psychos? No,
oh, you did it on purpose.
No, I did it on purpose, because I was like, if you've got your own relationship, what are you doing, missus?
Oh, what then?
Yeah, she had the this yeah, is yeah.
Oh,
yeah. So, oh, honestly,
I don't know why people are just.
It's even embarrassing for me to go, to talk about it now, because it feels so petty and like nothing that I would ever be involved in now.
But you've just had a baby.
Yeah.
You're sitting there, like you said, you're sitting there with your newborn baby at 4 o'clock in the fucking morning. He's been out on the piss 3 times since you've had her. And he's getting a massive phone call. Of course you're going to feel like that. And of course you're going to react like that. You know, I don't think you should feel embarrassed, because I think it's completely understand. I mean, obviously I know it's not what you would do if you...
If you're in your right mind, definitely.
But I think it's completely understandable that you did, and it's like, it's...
Yeah, I was definitely at my most sort of fragile at that point. So I went in and confronted him about it, but obviously that probably wasn't the best idea, because as you say, he'd been out drinking, it was early morning, and he started to sort of blame it on me.
Oh, yeah.
And I got very upset, and we ended up having a bit of a... large argument, and the baby was just on the bed, and we had a massive argument, and I put my jacket on because I needed to get out of there, because My heart was racing and everything had sunk because I'd never experienced a feeling like that before, a feeling so let down and so shocked because he had been so good to me and so loving towards me. Like we were going to get married, you know, we were going to have more kids, and it was all really exciting. I thought I found Prince Charming, that everything was going to work out perfectly. It sounds funny to me now, but then that's how I felt. So I was looking at my daughter and I'm thinking, like, is this, are we not good enough? Is this not enough? So anyway, I went to leave and he grabbed my arm and I turned around and I hit him and like basically attacked him like a wild animal. Like all that pain and all that hurt just came flying out of me. And he was saying, our baby, our baby, our baby, like that. And I couldn't stop. I mean, I'm 5'2" and 8 stone. Like there was only so much damage that I was going to do, but it wasn't the right thing to do. Shouldn't attack somebody. And so I think that it was a mixture of the drink and shock. And also he's got a little bit of like a narcissistic tendency. He doesn't really appreciate people, you know, putting him down, you know, coming for him. It's like, how dare you? And that is what he said. He was like, how fucking dare you? Like, and he called the police. And so I'm sitting there with the baby. I've kind of like just sunk into this, into shock. I've gone into shock. And I was holding her and he was on the phone ranting and raving at the police, and he was trying to give them the details, but he, and he couldn't remember like my date of birth. So I was like 19th of the 5th, 84, like answering the questions for him to be on the phone to the police. And so they turned up. And we were having our bifolding doors done at the same time. So we had people in the house while this was all, while the police turned up. And it was just so unbelievable. Like I've never, ever, I know that there are some people who are used to having, you know, the police around or being involved in the police. They're like, oh yeah, I've been in a cell a few times. No, not me, not me. That's not something I'm used to. And so this lovely couple of police people came in, and one guy was especially really nice, and he could see like what had gone on basically. And he sort of said to him, you know, you need to stay out here, and because he was still sort of pacing and ranting and raving. And I'd said, like, I went, is this going to go on my record? Because if it does, then I'm not going to be able to get my job back as a contractor. And that was when Paige's dad really got upset and started saying, you can't take her, that's our livelihood. Because I was like, you know, earning fairly well at the time. It was, it's not a good reflection on him. I think both of us were really at a low ebb at that point. Like, this isn't, you know, this isn't a reflection on how horrendous he is. It was just a bad moment for us both. But so I had to go and make up some bottles for Paige so that she wasn't left, you know, without anything to drink. And I got taken in and processed.
They took you in?
Yeah, because it's domestic violence. And in a domestic dispute, whoever the claim is made against, because often they'll get there and the wife's covering the eye going, oh no, it was an accident, I fell down the stairs. So you have to take that person in. So I got taken in and processed, and I was in a cell for 9 hours, and I had to wee in front of a camera. It was like, what is my life? I can't believe this is happening. And I was literally, I had a breakdown in that, in the cell, like a full breakdown. I wasn't the same since after that for years. I was not the same. It shook me to the core, because I went in there thinking, I didn't know at this point whether this relationship with the person he'd been texting was a relationship or not. I found out later that it was. So I thought he might be got a new girlfriend, and so that's all gone. And now I might have lost my job as well. And my baby isn't with me. And that was the hardest part. I didn't care about anything else really. I nearly threw up. Like I was pulling my own hair out. And And they were like, I know, I understand that your baby is 10 months old. I was like, weeks? She's 10 weeks old. She's 2 months old. Let me phone. I need to phone. They gave me 2 phone calls because I was hysterical. But I got some really good advice from the police guy. He said to me in the car, he went, can I give you some advice? I was like, yeah. And I was just like zoning out, like, and he went, take the legal advice. And I'm really pleased that he told me that, because she was really helpful. And actually, I, being as honest and open as I am, could have got myself into more trouble by telling the whole ins and outs of the story, thinking I didn't really do anything wrong. Well, yeah, you did. But she was just like, no comment, no comment, no comment. And I was like, okay. And they really do trigger you as well in there. They ask you some really hard questions. And it's like, you know, in between tears, you know, like no comment. Obviously, he didn't want to press charges, because by then he's realised what he's done. And he's thinking, oh, my God, and feeling awful. Like, and, after that, it was very, very difficult to build back up from there. And yet we did still try. We did still try.
Yeah. I just want to say a couple of things. Like, it's good what happened, because obviously if it was the other way round, that would have been the worst thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And I hate the fact, because you're a woman and he's a man, I was thinking, well, that's a bit off. But of course women can hurt men as much as, you know. And I hate that that's in me to think that. It's a really hard one, because obviously you are in a new relationship, and you've found evidence of him being unfaithful. No matter whether they're having a relationship, he's still having the conversation. Like, that's, you know, if the shoe was on the other foot, I'm sure he would have been extremely upset about that. You know, so I'm just trying to think, like, if it had been the other way round and you'd said we tried to build stuff back up, I would have been like, what, you can't, once they've hit you, that's it. But it's weird how you think of it differently, because, like, I can understand your reaction. I don't agree with it, because obviously I'd never condone violence, but I can understand if you lost it and lashed out, because you've just had a baby and you've discovered this. And I can understand that anger and, you know...
I've never done that before. It's so out of character for me. I remember feeling like a complete red mist came over me, and I couldn't, there was no other, and I think if he'd have let me go, it would have been, you know, I would have walked away, but because he grabbed me and didn't let me go, it's like, that's when I lost it. But again, as you say, there's no excuse. There's no excuse, and I certainly regret ever lashing out and being physical with him. But you know, and I definitely was more than punished for what I did. You know, it was the worst experience of my life being in there.
But when you said being separated from the baby, like I feel that. I would have had a fucking meltdown.
I did.
So what, when you went home, how was he? Did he want to sort things out?
Oh, he was heartbroken. He was heartbroken. He was like, he didn't know what I was going to feel. And we just sort of were both crying our eyes out. Like, couldn't believe that he had got to that point.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, when you sever something so deeply, it's extremely hard to come back from it. Unless you're both willing to do the work that's involved. And was sort of left with the impression, or actually, no, it's... I keep trying to sugarcoat it, because I don't like to make him look bad, because I always am conscious that one day Paige might listen to this. That's my only thing. Yes. I don't care about anything else. I don't want her. She loves her daddy, as well she should.
Yeah.
So it's hard. It's like I really try and protect, but... He basically told me that if I kept bringing it up, that he would leave. So I had to squash it. And so it was like I couldn't experience how I was feeling. I couldn't feel like I couldn't talk to him about it anymore, or deal with my insecurity. Because this girl was a girl from his work. And then he would go to work and I'd be like, you know, I couldn't say what I was thinking or feeling about, like, and he'd say, oh, I don't see her anymore, you know, we've been...
Oh, so you couldn't talk about the relationship, not what happened between, the incident between you two, you couldn't talk about his infidelity anymore?
Or, oh, no, so you know, he said, like, we've completely separated, like, we're not talking anymore at all, you know, she's in a different office thing now and all this. So, right. But it was like I felt like I couldn't, if I spoke about it, or if I said, you know, oh, have you spoken to her, or what's happening, or, you know, anything like that, I just wanted some reassurance, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was like, we can't speak about it ever again. It's like it never happened. Otherwise, it's all going to go tits up, basically, and it's going to cause us to argue. And I was like, right. So it just got trapped in my body. Like, I didn't really know what to do with that feeling.
But it always comes out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's got to come out, hasn't it? Yeah. So you either deal with it at the time and just, you get your reassurance and whatever, or you don't, and then it just explodes later.
Yeah, and I think it was too painful for him to keep dredging it back up, but you have to do that if you're serious about healing a wound. And I didn't know that at the time either, otherwise I would have pushed for it. I just thought, well, maybe it is better if we just... you know, move on from it and try and put it in our past. We've got the baby to focus on, you know, and she needs to be our main focus. But then, you know, it didn't really go that well after that. You know, like a couple of months later, there was another text from a different girl. And then there was like a couple of months later, he was caught chatting to another girl who was with a friend of mine. And she actually told a load of people in my friendship group about it, and then I had to go to her house and speak to her about it and ask her.
Was she aware that you were together?
Oh yeah, yeah. We were all out for my birthday. So it was, you know, and again, it was like, he's always like very much, oh no, it was innocent, but she sort of said, well, I know that he's with Nikki, and it made me feel quite uncomfortable. And it was like asking for my number or whatever else, you know. So, but it was always for a different, and it was always when he had a drink and he was obviously feeling insecure or feeling like he wanted an ego boost. And you know, people can say, oh, that's horrendous, how could you do that? But there's so many people out there who have that real urge for reassurance, or am I still good enough? You know, do people still like me? And so they test the boundaries and they flirt to the extent where, so that their ego can get that boost. And I think that's what he was trying to do, but it was to the detriment of me and my mental health, because I was so painfully loyal, and I was able to hide the first two. Like, I didn't even tell my friends that I'd been arrested.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be going out for the first time to wet the baby's head that night when I was arrested, and I said, I can't come, and they all went out without me. And my sister knew, and she had to go and pretend and be all happy smiley when she knew that everything had fallen apart.
Yeah.
And then the next one I kind of squashed and didn't tell anybody about that. And then after that, it was like all of my friends knew before I did, and I felt this sort of crushing embarrassment and humiliation. And so it was like then I thought, I can't keep pretending that this isn't happening, because I know that he loves me and I love him, but we are both so flawed as people.
Yeah.
Like, he's got this narcissistic tendency where he likes the ego boosts, and I've got this codependency where I'm not a person unless I'm with him. So it's really toxic. And everyone, there's so many people that are in this pattern where you've got the sad woman or man who are crushed, looking on as their narcissistic partner's facing out and being like the peacock and going, look, everybody, look at me. And it's so common. And I was in this loop. Yeah. I was in this painful loop. And I remember thinking to myself, I love my daughter so much that I am willing to go through hell to stop her from ever learning these patterns herself. I absolutely refuse to allow this to happen. And we did go through hell after that.
Dun dun dun. Sorry to leave you on a proper cliffhanger, but I had to cut it into two episodes because it was like, as I said, it's like nearly 2 hours long. And
And I thought that was a really good place to stop, because hopefully you will be back next week to find out all about the rest of the story. And believe me, there's a lot more to come. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed that. I was very appreciative of how honest and open Nikki was for talking about what she'd been through and the nasty incident. And yeah, it made me question myself with regards to what happened. But yeah, it's nice to talk and question yourself, I think. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. And if you want to find her, the Epic Life Coach, I'll post links, obviously. But join her Facebook group. It's good. It's nice. It's just positivity. It's nice seeing the people being positive, especially at the moment with all the doom and gloom. So yeah, check it out. But thanks for listening. If you like this, there's loads more episodes you can listen to. Please share them. Please subscribe. And stay safe and sane. And I'll see you next week. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.